This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, happy Tuesday. Greetings, my friend, or Wednesday, excuse me. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Oh, my goodness. There is so much going on that I want to get to. I want to get into this whole, there's this giant hurricane, Hurricane Michael, bearing down on the Florida Panhandle. This is climate change on steroids. ExxonMobil, who knew back in the 1980s, maybe the 1970s, that this exact scenario or something very close to it would play out if they and their compatriots in the fossil fuel industry continued to market and promote the use of fossil fuels and we all continue to burn them, they knew this was coming. And in fact, for a few years in the 80s, they tried to do something about it. And then they got shut down, or at least then they had a strategy change. And then Mr. Tillerson steered the ship of state. Well, actually, about a decade ago, Rex Tillerson, when he was CEO of ExxonMobil, said, yeah, we're concerned about the climate. We're in favor of a carbon tax. But were they really? No lobbying effort, no PR effort. No, it was just a statement to take the sting out of things. Well, now we've got the situation where, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, I'm going to present a choice to you. Here we have the situation where the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, has come out and explicitly said that we basically have 10 to 12 years left to cut our carbon usage by about half and cut our use of, and take our electricity use. Well, here's the actual numbers. Let me just give it to you. Greenhouse gases need to be cut in half by 2013 from 2010 levels. Renewable energy must go from 20% of our electricity mix worldwide to 67%, and the use of coal needs to be phased out. The alternative, they say, is catastrophe. Widespread drought, famine, wildfires, conflict over food, wars over land, wars over fresh water, massive die-off of coral reefs leading to massive die-off of fish in the oceans all around the world. This was written by 91 scientists from 40 countries. And it was in response, actually. This was an unusual report. It was in response to some small island nations that are concerned about losing their existence to climate change. And they said, yep, your concerns are valid. So ExxonMobil now is saying, has just given $1 million. Actually, they're paying it out over a two-year period. $1 million is like, 8 seconds worth of revenue for ExxonMobil or something like that. And but they're giving $500,000 this year and $500,000 next year to this group, Americans for Carbon Dividends, to support a $40 a ton carbon tax that would reduce the use of carbon in the United States. Now, I don't think $40 a ton is anything close to what's appropriate. I think, the actual cost is probably on the order of $1,000 a ton right now, given how bad things are. A lot of people, many organizations over the years have recommended anywhere from $80 to $300 a ton. But ExxonMobil's willing to do this. They're willing to go along with $40 a ton, but there's a huge caveat. And that huge caveat is that they are saying very clearly and very explicitly that they will do this and they will support this if we give them a waiver of liability. So, the game that they're playing here is basically the game the tobacco companies played, only the tobacco companies weren't able to pull it off. The tobacco companies lied for decades about how poisonous their product was. Same thing with the asbestos industry. They lied, literally lied, paid PR firms, paid advertisements, paid spokespeople, paid phony scientists. The same phony scientists like Singer who's, now, oh, there's no climate change. Right? They literally paid these scientists. Many of the exact same scientists worked first for asbestos, then for tobacco, and now for fossil fuel. And the tobacco companies got nailed for this to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. They lost their power in Washington, D.C. They got outed. And ExxonMobil is saying, if you'll give us a waiver of liability, if you'll pass a law that says that nobody can sue us, and keep in mind, they're being sued right now by this group associated with Jim Hansen. The people in the panhandle of Florida will have the basis for a lawsuit against ExxonMobil and Koch Industries and all these other companies. I mean, they may not succeed, but they'll have the basis for a lawsuit saying, you caused this or you made this worse. This is the worst hurricane literally in the history of recorded weather history in the Florida area to hit the Florida panhandle, a Category 4 hurricane. Never before. Literally never before. So here's the question. Should we do like South Africa? South Africa, when they decided, okay, we're going to end apartheid, we're going to have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. If you come forward and confess your sins, you get a pardon. And de Klerk did that, actually. He came forward and said, yeah, I ordered the murder of this guy. I ordered the murder of that guy. He just laid it all out. And they said, okay, fine, you're free to go. And it wasn't just him. I mean, it was many, many people. I'm inclined to think that the fate and future of our planet is more important than revenge. And I realize this isn't, you know, a satisfying, oh boy, we got these sons of whatever kind of feeling thing, you know. But I'm inclined to say, if, now ExxonMobil is not offering to do a public mea culpa, but to the best of my knowledge, nobody's asked them to. But I would be willing to support a proposal where if ExxonMobil said, yeah, we did this. Here's how we lied. Here's when we lied. Here's what we know. Here's when we knew it. Here are the politicians we paid off. Here's how much money went to the Trump campaign. Here's how much money went to take your pick, right? A Republican and probably some Democratic members of Congress. If ExxonMobil would lay all that out and then support a real carbon tax, not just this little $40 a ton thing, then I would not object to that. I would say, you know, it's more important. We've got 12 years. It's more important to get that done than not. So what do you think? What do you think should be done to ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers, you know, Koch Industries and the Koch brothers, and, you know, Shell and Conoco and all these other companies, particularly those companies that have been politically active over the years? For that matter, what should be done to the politicians? We are, the Republican Party in the United States of America is literally the only political party in the world that denies climate change. Well, actually, no, let me correct that. I'm not sure what's going on in Russia. I mean, you know, it's a fossil fuel-based economy. I'm not sure if they're denying climate change or not. But they're certainly not supporting efforts like this. But the big one right now is Brazil. They're the fifth largest emitter in the world of carbon. The seventh largest emitter of carbon. They're the fifth largest population country in the world. And you've got a right-winger who's just about to get elected as president with help from, apparently, the cattle and soy industry, which is the cattle industry, soybeans are fed to cattle, which is the major force for deforestation in Brazil, which is the main way that Brazil is emitting carbon and messing with our atmosphere. And he's saying, oh, we don't care about climate change. So apparently the fossil fuel money is spreading around the planet, or maybe not. I mean, you know, but let's lay all this out. What do we do? Okay, I want to talk about that. We're going to get into Mr. Khashoggi and what Saudi Arabia is up to. We got Donald Trump screaming to lock up Dianne Feinstein and mispronouncing her name to make her sound more Jewish.
This is the Tom Hartman Program,
which is the classic anti-Semitic slur that comes off the Fox News commentators. They did it with Rod Rosenstein as well. We'll be back with all of this after this. And welcome back. Nick in Hemet, California, listening at our Pacific affiliate there, 90.7 FM. Hey, Nick, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I can't believe you touched on that about the cattle business. I was going to say, what, it's not politically correct or something to speak of this? You know, the cattle industry has been something that, as the brotherhood of Christian people, you know, we've been telling people for years and years, everybody's going to stop this cattle business, animal eating stuff, because it's one of the biggest uses of water in California, for instance, in alfalfa growing. And as you said, the cutting down of the forests in Brazil is at a tremendous rate happening. So I'm just thankful that you're talking about that. I appreciate that, Tom. God bless you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Let me add to that one of the major sources of methane produced in the United States, I think it's second to fracking, is animal husbandry, is I think what they call it.
Amen, brother.
And it's not just
Absolutely.
Cattle. It's also pigs and chickens. And
absolutely.
You know,
the whole thing,
yeah.
is a mess.
Yeah. I mean,
all right, Tom, right on, brother. I'm glad you're talking. I appreciate listening to you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Nick. I appreciate the call. Yeah. I mean, this is what we're doing. Dana in High Point, North Carolina. Hey, Dana. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's on your mind?
Hi, I think a penalty that fossil fuel companies should pay instead of a huge fines and in a court settlements for their role in covering up the damage of climate change is to force them to invest in carbon extraction technology, which is hugely expensive, and it requires an enormous capital investment to start building these machines that can take carbon out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, there's going to be a documentary coming out from HBO next year that I'm in. That we went over to Germany and filmed some of these machines, these carbon capture machines, and the technology is there. But if you look at battery technology, I think that's a really instructive thing, or solar technology. Solar photovoltaic solar technology, particularly in the case of solar technology. 30 years ago, the cost of solar, the cost to produce electricity from solar power has declined by 97% in 30 years. Because as the demand has increased, the technology has gotten, consequentially better, year by year by year. And, competition, I mean, all these things that are actually the useful things that come out of the marketplace have radically dropped the price of solar. And carbon capture technology right now is kind of on the edge. I mean, it costs, depending on which technology you're talking about, somewhere between $50 and $100 a ton to capture carbon out of the atmosphere. Some of the technologies are more expensive than that. But, that's kind of state of the art right now. And we need to get that down to $10, $20 a ton or less. And I think it's entirely possible. And it could be paid for, with a carbon tax, for example, among other things. Although the carbon tax, the dividend thing that ExxonMobil is in favor of, is returned to the public as a sort of a tax rebate. But yes, absolutely, Dana. I absolutely agree. Very well said. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Actually, 19 minutes, 53 seconds. We'll be here, 55, 56, 57, 58. We'll be back in just a moment with more of your calls and more of the news of the day. Stick around. Welcome back. It's 20 minutes and a half past the hour. Greg Pallas will be with us in about 10 minutes here, by the way, giving us an update on what's going on with all the voting purges around the country. Yesterday was the last day to register in, I think, 14 states. So, here we are. He's got some new numbers out of Indiana that's pretty shocking. And in our second hour, Medea Benjamin is going to drop by. She has written a book, Kingdom of the Unjust. We've had her on about the book. But the unjust kingdom, of course, is Saudi Arabia. And we're going to be talking about what has happened with Mr. Khashoggi, and who has apparently been, according to the New York Times, murdered in the Saudi consulate in Turkey. And consulates, by the way, don't have the protections that embassies have. It's not actually Saudi soil. It's Turkish soil. So Turkey's getting pretty bent out of shape about this. So, we will get to that about an hour from now. A lot of interesting stuff going on. Should ExxonMobil be given a pass? The headline in the New York Times today from the editorial board, Wake Up World Leaders, the alarm is deafening. Michael Mann pointed out, Michael Mann, by the way, will be with us tomorrow. Michael Mann pointed out yesterday that, you know, the guy who literally invented the hockey stick that made Al Gore famous, University of Pennsylvania scientist, climate scientist. Michael Mann pointed out yesterday, and I'm sure he'll say the same thing in this program tomorrow, that this report from the IPCC is the consensus report. It is the most conservative. It doesn't include the possibilities of, tipping points being hit. It doesn't include the possibility that methane starts getting released really fast in the Arctic. It doesn't even contemplate a lot of positive feedbacks that a lot of people are very worried about, large chunks of the IPCC, but that they don't have 100% absolute proof that it's happening yet. And the IPCC will only put into their reports things that are absolutely proven. But every five years they release a report, and they have since 1988 when they first started. And every 5 years when they release these reports, every new report, its midpoint is where the extreme freakout point was in the previous report. In other words, they're way too cautious. In every single one of their reports, they've been way too cautious. So this was issued near Seoul, Korea on Monday. One UN official described it, quote, as a deafening, piercing smoke alarm going off in the kitchen. Unfortunately, writes the editorial board of the New York Times today, the no alarm seems loud enough to penetrate the walls of the White House or the cranium of its principal occupant. This was written by 91 scientists in 40 countries. The small island nations said, okay, you've set this threshold at 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 2 degrees Celsius. If we hit that, that's a disaster. That's what you've said. Can we look at what would happen if we moved that from 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit down to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit? Keep in mind, we've already warmed 9-tenths of a degree. And the panel concluded that, yeah, we've got to go for 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, 1.5 degrees Celsius. If we don't, mass die-off of coral reefs, widespread drought, famine, wildfires, wars over land, food, and fresh water. In other words, we're going to hit a point in literally 10 to 12 years where the planet, well, by 2030 anyway, where the planet could be, shall we say, hostile to civilization? I mean, there's no other way to describe it than hostile to civilization. I think that that's just the clearest thing. By the way, in Washington State, Governor Jay Inslee, actually, there's a carbon tax on the ballot that the governor is putting forward. So should we cut him a break? Should we save the planet? Or should we do everything we can to throw these bums in jail? John in Los Angeles, listening on KPFK. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Just first off, 12 years, okay. By my calculations, I think we have a lot less than that, personally.
I agree.
And as a matter of fact, the tipping point should be around 7 years, if I'm right. And this problem is a lot bigger than the United States. This is humanity. So therefore, everyone in humanity is going to have to do a Herculean effort to get on board to reverse the damage that's been done.
Yeah.
And it is possible. I got a bunch of friends, and I myself am very good in science and engineering. I've always been good in science and engineering. I got a 10,000-page plan that could actually take 400 years off of Earth. The problem is I'm disenfranchised, so I myself can't get it to nobody.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, this problem is bigger than the United States.
You're absolutely right, John, and thank you. You're absolutely right. But that said, we are a small country population-wise. We're only 340 million people, I believe. And yet we are the first or second largest emitter of carbon on Earth. We produce about as much carbon as China does with 1.2 billion people, or India with over a billion people. So every American is producing radically more carbon than every citizen of India or China or, frankly, Europe. And so, you know, there's a lot we can do. But in the meantime, what's the Trump administration doing? They're just blowing all this stuff up. They're trying to you know, Trump repealing the President Obama's efforts. You know, I'll get into that right after the break. And then we'll continue picking up your calls. All our lines are busy, are full right now. And you know, which is a good thing. The question, I think, you know, what do we do about this? And I think the United States actually is at the forefront of this because we're such big producers of carbon and we have the technology to do something about it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
So be with us next and then we'll continue this conversation. Stick around. On the line with us is our old friend Greg Palast, the investigative reporter, the author, and producer of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which you can find over on Amazon right now, the movie, you can watch it there, author of a book of the same title. And Greg, you've been doing welcome back, first of all.
Welcome back. And who are you calling old? And by the way, hello to our friends in Los Angeles, the new listeners of KPFK, where you and I are going to be doing a fundraiser out there in Los Angeles in a couple weeks. Go to kpfk.org.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a fundraiser, and we're going to have a great time. I'm really looking forward to it. So, what's the latest on the vast ballot purge that the Republican Party is doing across the country? Everybody's been looking at Georgia in large part, I think, because of your reporting. You know, 500,000 or more people purged off the vote by Brian Kemp, who's now running for governor. He's the Secretary of State. But Indiana?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say thank you because it was on the Hartman program that we announced that we, through a lawsuit, I was able to put up the names of all 500,000 people purged by Brian Kemp, Secretary of State, who not coincidentally is also running for governor. I should say yesterday alone, several thousand people went to our site, over 100,000 people went to our website, tens of thousands re-registered, finding themselves purged. We got thank you notes from 1,900 people yesterday
Wow.
for saving their vote, and calls were being made, so it was thousands from this effort. Well, and it got a huge splash nationwide. Again, thanks for kicking this off. The NAACP, Southern Christian, Reverend Jesse Jackson flew down. I mean, it was big, but, you know, I got a call from the attorneys this morning. 53,000 names were held up and not added, that people re-registered or registered, held up, not added to the voter rolls, a new fight. They're just saying...
is this still in Georgia you're talking about?
Which Georgia? The one that's not in America, I guess, because, you know, in America, you're supposed to be able to vote.
Right. So Brian Kemp, he's still Secretary of State, even though he's running for governor. He's keeping 53,000 people in Georgia who just registered to vote from voting in this election because what? They don't have time to process them?
They say they have to confirm their addresses, et cetera. See, that's why I tell people register online. They will confirm you immediately. Those who didn't listen to us, Tom, and went to paper registration forms, it's going to be a battle now. But we did register tens of thousands, literally yesterday, because of this campaign. But with the national coverage of that Georgia effort, what has not come out in the news yet is just another 469,000 voters purged in Indiana. They just gave us that list. We just put it up on GregPalast.com. Unfortunately, their re-registration deadline passed last night. Some people got the news at the last minute. But here's the deal. Our computer experts went through the list and said, wait a minute, we have 28,000 people here that the state marked as having been removed by our friend Chris Kobach's interstate cross-check. The problem is that in Indiana, unlike Georgia, in Indiana, they have a federal court order. The NAACP League of Women Voters got a federal court order that Indiana could not use the cross-check list to remove voters, and there were 28,000. And that supposedly these are people who moved out of state. So we actually checked with the post office. We have a special contract with the post office and with 200 private databases. We can confirm that at least 20,000 of those people who were removed in violation of a federal court order, at least 20,000, and we have each of their names, were removed in violation of the law, and that they are still living at their registration addresses in Indiana. They've been given no notice that they are purged. Please, people, show up at the polls, bring ID, and we're just going to have to fight this one out. I'll be speaking to the lawyers as soon as I get off the phone.
But they will be given provisional ballots that won't be counted.
If the only thing you can do is fill out a provisional ballot, do it. But we're going to have to fight to get them counted because they definitely will not be counted unless we can get another court order saying this violation of a court order will not stand.
Right. This is remarkable. You know, the power of one person's story, Greg, is so great. Yeah, like with the whole, you know, these kids who are being detained, you know, the children that the Trump administration is putting in concentration camps right now. This one two-year-old girl who was in court in New York earlier this week, her story, her picture, suddenly everybody's like, oh my God, one two-year-old, you know, and it's literally 14,000 children. You've got 20,000 voters there in Indiana who you can confirm are actual voters who actually live where they live, who are registered to vote. I'm guessing the majority of them are probably in cities or areas that are predominantly black or Hispanic.
That's right, the northern tier in Gary, Indiana.
Right. Is it possible to find one of them who is an incredibly, you know, all-American, a veteran, you know, it's...
Well, actually, we did. We found many, because we asked people, if 1,900 people responded to our request, if you are purged, can you contact us? You know, most people do not want to go on camera or have their stories public, but I want to tell you, I'm not going to use his last name, but in Savannah, there's an African-American gentleman named Juan. He's a veteran. He served in Afghanistan. I have pictures of him in uniform and with his helmet on in Afghanistan. And he was shocked. He spoke to me and he said, I served in the military. I was in Illinois. I came back. I voted for Obama in 2008 and 12. And here I am purged. The only conceivable reason is the cross-check list. They marked, so they removed his vote. Now, he did re-register in time. This is, you know, an American war veteran, and the head of the NAACP was shocked that they would take away the rights of this war veteran, Dewan. I can't give his last name without his permission.
But that's my point, is the power of story is insane. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah. And to say that the head of the NAACP, we looked up his name, and he hadn't been removed, but three of his relatives were purged from the voter rolls. NAACP.
Wow.
You know, and this is Brian Kemp. Now, I should mention, by the way, that Kemp, and if you go to gregpalace.com and you're in Georgia, you're in Indiana, even if you've now passed the deadline yesterday to re-register, take a look, see what the story is, contact me. We're going to take steps to try to get people back on, to reopen registration, to just, frankly, put people back on. Kemp has already lost two suits against one of our plaintiffs, Stacy Hopkins, and who got 139,000 people returned to the voter rolls because with Kemp, and then we just had another 40,000 return. Now, he takes off gobs of people, gets caught, and say, okay, you got me. But now, as the election gets near, he's shutting things down. He's blocking adding the names of people who filled out registration forms. And I should say, he's the third Secretary of State in Georgia's recent history to run for office, and the only one who has not resigned from office. So he's determining who gets to vote, where they get to vote. This is a guy who's been closing polling stations around the state. Which ballots get counted? Who gets provisional ballots? Whose absentee ballots get counted or rejected? He's counting his own ballots. The other two secretaries of state resigned when they ran for governor. Not him, because he knows he's running against Stacey Abrams, who could be the first African-American governor in U.S. history, and he's losing. It's close, but he's losing, and the only way he can win is by making sure that Stacey Abrams voters don't get to cast their ballots.
Yeah. Yeah, and this has happened. This has been happening all over the country now that we know of. I mean, you know, the high water point of this in terms of publicity was when Jeb Bush in 2000 purged close to 80 or 90,000 African Americans off the rolls in Florida. You're the guy who, you know, was doing the work for BBC who exposed this.
Yeah, I mean, we got the list of the purge voters, and right next to their names were their races, so it's all said BLA, BLA for black.
Hmm.
And they were accused of being felons. Not one, and I repeat, not one was an illegal felon voter. Not one. And that's what elected George Bush. You know what?
How many people was that?
Astonishing to me.
How many people was that?
94,000 on the list. We figure something like 58,000 were actually purged, were actually blocked from voting. Others didn't vote or were able to re-register. The other, but here I am. We're 18 years later, Tom.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about purges of African-American and Hispanic and Asian voters, and now young voters they're going after. They're just, the only thing that's different now is that it's wider, it's bigger. It's in 26 states where we've threatened federal action in to get the information.
And this is why we're getting the redshift. This is why the exit polls show Democrats are winning, because people come out and say, yeah, I voted for a Democrat. They gave me a provisional ballot, but I voted for a Democrat. And so they write that down as a...
The pollsters never ask, by the way. Did you get a ballot, or did you get a provisional ballot? Because people don't really even know the difference. They think that their vote counted, and there's a good chance it didn't. If you were blocked by Kemp, if you've been on this purge list that we have, same in Indiana. Sad stuff, man. But we're fighting it. Go to gregpals.com. See if your name's there.
There you go. If you're in Indiana, if you're in Georgia, you can see the actual purge list, and you can see if your name is on it. And, you know... And tell everybody you know to get over to gregpalace.com and check this out. Greg, thanks so much again for the great work you're doing and for coming on our show.
You're the best, Tom. Thank you.
Good talking
with
you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back. Should ExxonMobil get amnesty in exchange for confessing their crimes? Or do we lock them all up? And welcome back. Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Hey, Dave, thoughts on ExxonMobil and whether we should be offering amnesty?
Well, I don't want to have any revenge on anybody. I just want to see this problem taken care of. And I've spoken to you about it before. You know, I think climate change, human-induced climate change, is the issue.
Right.
I don't think there are.
What if we change the word from revenge to justice?
Well, yeah, that would be great. You know, I'm not out to get anybody, but one of the things I wanted to bring up was there was a poll I saw on MSNBC about what the major issues voters were concerned with, and there was like eight issues, and climate change wasn't on there.
Right.
And I was shocked. I thought, what are people talking about? To me, this affects a lot of other issues, especially the economy, immigration. All those type of things. And
I'll bet on that list also was not giant corporate mergers or corporate overreach or money in politics.
No, money in politics was on there.
It was.
That was one of them. But, you were talking about that the United States, you know, per capita, we are the highest emitters. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to us personally too. I'm as guilty as anybody of doing a lot of little things that I could be doing differently. And I think it starts with each of one of us to do a better job on trying to, you know, not eat as much meat, not eat meat at all, or you know, not drive when I don't need to drive, just not leave things plugged in when they're not being in use. A lot of things that I could be doing.
Right, but if outside of becoming vegetarians, if all of us were to do pretty much everything we can, you know, go to LED light bulbs and dial down the temperature and all that Jimmy Carter stuff, it still would be a drop in the bucket. We need governmental level policy changes.
Absolutely, we do. But I'm just saying that it has to start with each one of us too, and also, you know, speaking to other people about this issue, and even though it's uncomfortable with people that don't agree with you, just tell them, hey, don't believe me. Do your own research. You know, this is a this I think we've got less time than they're talking about, personally. Yeah. I really do.
Oh, I do, too, and so do a lot of the people who contributed to this report. It's just that they couldn't get 100% consensus, which is unfortunate. I'd love to see a majority report rather than a consensus report. I think they'd have their hair on fire. I think they'd be screaming about
those things. Those are always conservative estimates from scientists, because that's
their job. That's their business, is being very, very careful, very specific, very precise, we know this for a fact. And that's what they're saying. They're not, they don't want to engage in conjecture. But, here's the thing, though, Dave. You've got a situation right now where people are going to die in Florida today. People are, tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people in Florida. They're going to lose their homes. They're going to lose all the pictures from their whole entire life. They're going to lose, all of their books. They're going to lose I'm thinking of the things that are important to me. All of the things that are meaningful to them. And they're losing these things because of the behavior of these fossil fuel dynasties.
Sure.
Shouldn't they be held to account?
Well, they should be. And it has to start with them, too.
Yeah. Okay. Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Good talking with you. We'll be back. It's 49 minutes past the hour. So Donald Trump's dirty climate scam is going to, if he succeeds, well, actually, I believe he's already done it, rolling back the Obama fuel efficiency standards, just that, is going to cause an additional 1,400 premature deaths a year. It will cause 15,000 new cases of upper respiratory problems. It will cause an additional 140,000 children to develop asthma, severe asthma, and could cost us 60,000 jobs. Should the oil companies, should we be putting people in jail? Should we be hitting them with huge fines? I mean, people are dying right now. People have been dying for decades now, but it's really becoming obvious that the behavior of the fossil fuel companies is leading to the death of human beings, the damage to democracies around the world, and to the potential destruction of worldwide civilization. What do we do? Steve in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Steve, what do you think?
Well, I wanted to comment on the oil companies. I think what we ought to do is to nationalize them, and that way we could keep a better eye on how they do business. As well, we could also promote more environmentally friendly ways of getting energy. What do you think, Tom?
I think that it's something worth considering. Norway did it. Venezuela did it. That didn't work out so well. Russia has sort of denationalized, but they're functionally national companies. I think, though, that a middle ground is to do what Alaska did, which is to say, that oil you're pumping out of the ground, it really belongs to us. And so when you pump that oil, you can lay claim to the rigs and to the drilling operation and to the land around it and all that kind of stuff. But when you pump that oil, you've got to pay a tax to us on every single barrel. And then that tax goes into the Alaska Permanent Fund that produces a check of anywhere from $1,000 to the year that Sarah Palin was running for vice president, I think it was over $4,000 per Alaskan citizen per year, man, woman, child, everybody, distribute some of that money back. So it functions as a very small but very effective carbon tax in Alaska. So that's kind of a middle ground, although I think that we should establish it much higher. But, good idea, Steve.
Does promote, people getting on that sugar hive, getting that little check. I think we're looking to devalue that fossil fuel business and to, bring up the value of, environmentally friendly sources of energy.
Yeah, and the way you do that is with a carbon tax, and ExxonMobil is supporting that, but a $40 carbon tax is not going to move the needle very much. It's going to start the process, though, particularly for the big companies. And it's going to make renewables much, much more attractive. Steve, thanks for the call. Maverick in Edmonds, Washington. Hey, Maverick, what's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Hey.
Couple of things real quick. Is it wrong to refer to that orange troglodyte as appointed rather than elected? Also, why does FDR sound like he's British? And my other thing I wanted to share was I think we need a doomsday clock for climate change to bring recognition to the urgency of this problem.
Oh, that's a good idea. The you've got the doomsday clock for the nuclear folks, for nuclear war, and then you've got debt clock in New York City that, in fact, the guy who funded it for years and years has died, but it lives on. Yeah, I think that's a great idea, Maverick. Thanks a lot for the suggestion. Jim in Hamilton, Ohio. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Before these hurricanes hit the Carolinas, Duke Energy came up with a proposal to use the pig waste ponds to generate electric. I just wonder how that would fare as far as pollution and stuff.
You mean the waste ponds from the pig farms?
Yes.
Huh. What, to just, use bacteria or some sort of enzymatic process?
That you could draw off of it, generate electricity.
Yeah, they probably could. Actually, in fact, each one of these pig operations could be turned into a little mini power plant.
There was a ranch out west that did that with cattle waste.
Yeah, I remember that story. That was a couple of years ago. It's possible, and that's the kind of thing that people might be start thinking about if we had a $300 or $400 a barrel, or excuse me, a ton tax on carbon, from fossil fuel sources. People would start looking at alternatives, and that would be one of them. I would prefer to see all these pig operations in North Carolina. In fact, the biggest one is owned by the Chinese government. And a lot of that pork is being shipped back to China, and we get the pollution, and we get the poison, and we get the stinky, miles and miles being destroyed. But yeah, it's a great idea. Thanks a lot, Jim. Scott in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I think that we should approach this from a business perspective, since that's something that the oil industry would understand, and we should have somebody like MIT work up a Manhattan Project for correcting what we've done to the environment and what we're going to do to it, and give the oil industry the option of either financing that Manhattan Project or paying a fine that's twice as much.
Yeah.
And
if we are looking right now at destruction just in the United States, you look at the wildfires in California, you look at the hurricanes and storm damage and tornadoes, for that matter, across the Midwest. I mean, for example, a couple of years ago, we saw our first mile-wide tornado. I think it was in Oklahoma. First one in the history of the United States. Never before had we seen a mile-wide tornado. These extreme weather events. I mean, we've always had extreme weather events, but the extreme, times in order of magnitude is the consequence of climate change. So right now, you could argue that the fossil fuel industry, the Koch brothers and all their buddies, and the fossil fuel barons, the Murray Energy and all these other guys, that they really should be on the hook for hundreds of billions of dollars of reparations. That, in fact, arguably the insurance companies could be the ones suing them. And I'm, frankly, I'm surprised that they haven't started it. But we have to make it in just incredibly uncomfortable and expensive for these guys, and we've got to do it right away. Jacob in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Jacob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. In terms of what we should do with the fossil fuel industry, I mean, I tend to agree with you that we need to do whatever is going to move fastest. I think personally that if we let them go, that in the long run, since this is going to be a multi-decade challenge, that not actually holding them accountable is going to end up having some long-term negative consequences. But I want to reemphasize, I really want to thank you for talking about this issue, because this is a qualitatively different issue than every other political one that we have, with possible exception of nuclear war, in that we can win every single other progressive issue out there, from minimum wage to equal pay protection to minority rights across the board. And if we don't do this one, those will all be meaningless Pyrrhic victories that will end up evaporating in front of us.
I agree. And I think this conversation that we're having right now is should be the main conversation that the corporate media is having.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been saying to people for the past year, and this report just reemphasizes it, that this is the most important decade, or the second most important decade coming up in human history. What are you going to be spending your time on Earth during the most important decade in human history?
Amen. Amen. Very well said. Jacob, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching us there. We will be back with Medea Benjamin, and we're going to be talking Saudi Arabia right after the break. It's 57 minutes, 30 seconds past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.